G'day. I am Tim Reinhardt with the Geothermal Technologies Program at the Department of Energy, and this is a presentation on low-temperature geothermal resources. There is a slideshow presentation, PowerPoint, that goes along with this briefing. It should be up now, and it should be on the cover slide with my name and information on there. The original presentation date for this was November 18th of 2010, and this will serve largely as a re-recording of that original presentation. I would like to thank AAPG for participating in this and making this event possible. We appreciate their flexibility in enabling this event to come together, rather, and this re-recording is in part at their request. This presentation will hopefully serve as a bit of an introduction to low-temperature geothermal resources. Slide two. Per the feedback that we received prior to the original webinar, the questions you see on this slide are some of the questions that we will attempt to answer going through this presentation, albeit not necessarily in the particular order shown. As we do go through this presentation, we will provide an overview of the Geothermal Technologies Program, GTP, as well as the Low Temperature and Co-Produced Sub-Program, and then present some details on the subcategories contained within the umbrella label of Low Temperature and Co-Produced. We will also provide some detail on what actually constitutes these resources. That will be followed by a brief discussion on the basic economics, geography, and geology of these resources, rather. And then we'll close things out with some case studies of ongoing projects and a look at current activities in the program. Slide three. The mission of the Geothermal Technologies Program is to establish geothermal energy as a significant contributor to America's future electricity generation by partnering with industry, academia, and the national laboratories to discover new geothermal resources, develop innovative methods, and demonstrate high-impact technologies. With this mission in mind, the vision of the program is to enable geothermal capacity to reach 12 gigawatts of domestic baseload power by 2020. In order to achieve this, a number of things are going to have to happen along the way. Among these are the low temperature and co-produced resources we believe will need to produce electricity at about 8 cents a kilowatt hour by 2016, and to have a 3 added gigawatts of geothermal capacity in the low temperature and co-produced regime by 2020 to reach that ultimate goal. Additionally, 1 gigawatt of undiscovered hydrothermal resources will need to be confirmed and brought online by 2020. And to reach the 12 gigawatts by 2020, we also will need to see significant advancement in innovative exploration technologies, also known as EIT, such as 3D seismic and remote sensing to reduce exploration risks and costs. Reservoir stimulation technologies will also be needed to enable the creation of high-performance, sustainable geothermal reservoirs with high flow rates and low thermal drawdown. Lastly, advanced working fluids and cooling systems will be required to reduce costs and expand the range of resource temperatures that can be utilized economically. Currently, working fluids are mixes of water, isobutane, and or isopentane. By and large. Slide four. This slide shows the most current breakout of the research, development, and demonstration activity subprograms here at the Geothermal Technologies Program, which will be used to pursue our mission, vision, and strategic goals. Of the four shown on the slide, EGS has the highest potential payback, but is the longest-term technology in the GTP portfolio. The Innovative Exploration Technologies subprogram actually feeds into the other three components by attempting to decrease the upfront risk for geothermal developers and to accelerate all geothermal deployment by improving the likelihood of exploration success and by assisting in resource discovery. The permeable sedimentary subprogram is the newest of the areas, the newest of the subprograms, and is also the most closely aligned with today's topic area, low temperature and co-produced resources. As we'll see here in a few slides, the low temperature and co-produced and permeable sedimentary subprograms can be seen as being on a time, technology, and resource continuum of sorts. We will get into that in a few more slides. Slide 5, the low temperature and co-produced subprogram overview. The low temperature and co-produced subprogram is aimed at the exploration, development, and deployment of non-traditional geothermal resources, including those resources below 150 degrees Celsius. Like EGS, or enhanced or engineered geothermal systems, low temperature resources hold the potential to bring geothermal out of just western states in the near term. New technologies are enabling economic use of these resources. For example, new binary generation units can use water with temperatures as low as 90 degrees Celsius or about 195 degrees Fahrenheit to produce electricity. And in Alaska, temperatures as low as 165 degrees Fahrenheit can be used to produce electricity. There are three major technology or resource areas in the low temperature and co-produced subprogram. The first is low temperature, obviously, and that's resources, geothermal fluids with temperatures below 150 degrees Celsius. The second is geopressured, which is using the heat, chemical energy, and pressure, or kinetic energy, from geopressured brines to produce electricity. More on that a little later as well. Co-produced is the third subcategory or resource area that we look at in the low temperature subprogram. And it's using the fluid co-produced at oil and gas wells or conceivably other hydrocarbon production sites such as coal bed methane in mining operations, again, to produce electricity. Advantages of low temperature geothermal facilities are that they are relatively low cost, have a short lead time, especially compared to traditional geothermal systems and obviously nuclear and some other resources. It's a much shorter lead time for low temperature geothermal. They also have a broader geographic distribution than most conventional geothermal. Lastly, binary units can be modular, easily scalable, and available off the shelf for these low temperature resources. So, DOE's objectives in this area are to demonstrate production from oil and gas fields, geopressure fields, and low temperature resources in a technically feasible and, importantly, an economically viable manner, with a long-term goal of bringing 3 gigawatts online by 2020, as was previously mentioned. Slide 6. While this slide does not contain the subcategory of low temperature resources that occur outside of sedimentary systems, i.e. those that are attached to traditional hydrothermal systems but are either on the outskirts or using water that has been previously cooled, this is purely sedimentary systems, it is still useful in describing the relationship between the low temperature and co-produced subprogram and the permeable sedimentary subprogram that was mentioned earlier as well. Initially, as we look at this, geothermal resource investigation was limited to crystalline rock formations. However, many sedimentary formations, including some that contain oil or gas, may be hot enough to serve as commercial geothermal reservoirs. Unlike conventional geothermal reservoirs, which generally occur in these fractured igneous and metamorphic formations, these sedimentary reservoirs have intergranular porosity, which allows relatively easy estimation of the hydraulic characteristics of a well from cores and well logs, which is not always the case or even possible in crystalline formations. The implied geology of this slide shouldn't be taken too seriously. Rather, it serves to demonstrate the evolutionary quality of low-temperature co-produced fluids into permeable sedimentary. As we proceed from left to right across the slide, we are proceeding both temporally, economically, and technologically. For example, geopressured resources have been shown to be feasible for decades, while co-produced generation has come on more recently. As we continue across, using the geothermal resource and strata lacking hydrocarbons, and eventually combining carbon sequestration with energy production, are the most technically and economically challenging, and therefore the most long-term and difficult activities. Hence, these latter two technologies fall under the permeable sedimentary subprogram and not the low temperature and co-produced subprogram. Slide 7. We'll now take a look at low temperature resources, and to avoid as much confusion as possible, I should restate at this point that when we talk about low temperature resources, we're speaking of those geofluids that have a temperature below 150 degrees Celsius, and not, in this instance, co-produced or geopressured resources. All three of these resources fall under the rubric of the low temperature and co-produced subprogram, but as a resource, they are considered separately in this presentation, mostly to keep things as simple and understandable as possible. Slide 8. What are low temperature resources? Well, to an extent, it depends on who you ask. For the USGS, or the U.S. Geological Survey, in their previous resource assessments, they have defined low-temperature geothermal resources as those geofluids with temperatures below 90 degrees Celsius, and moderate as those with a temperature below 150 degrees Celsius. For us at DOE's Geothermal Technologies subprogram, low-temperature resources combine the two USGS categories into one, meaning we say that anything below 150 degrees Celsius is low temperature. And then from an industry perspective, Tsubir Sanyal from Geothermex authored a paper on the subject in which he defined non-electrical grade geothermal resources as those below 100 degrees Celsius and very low temperature resources as those between 100 and 150 degrees Celsius. While this may make it seem that there is some disagreement as to the definition of low temperature, in that it's somewhat fractious, there is in fact some general consensus. At this time, there is largely agreement that fluids below 150 degrees Celsius must use binary generation technologies if electricity is to be generated, and that this barrier provides the clearest delineation between low temperature and conventional hydrothermal geothermal systems. So with some confidence, and certainly for the purposes of this presentation and the subprogram, low-temperature resources are defined as those below 150 degrees C, or about 300 degrees Fahrenheit. These resources can be used for either direct use or power generation. Slide 9. Unlike conventional hydrothermal geothermal resources, low-temperature geothermal resources are more widely distributed throughout the U.S. As can be seen from the map, at a depth of 6 kilometers, the resource base spreads out of the western states and expands into the Gulf Coast region, as well as significant swaths of the upper Midwest, and even to some warm spots in the eastern part of the country. Slide 10. The primary uses of low-temperature geothermal resources are currently in district and space heating, greenhouses, and aquaculture facilities, though numerous other uses for geothermally heated water do exist. Over 120 operations throughout the U.S. are using geothermal energy for district and space heating. District systems distribute hydrothermal water from one or more geothermal wells through a series of pipes to several houses in buildings or to blocks of buildings. District heating can save consumers, it has been estimated, 30 to 50% of the cost of natural gas heating. By contrast, space heating uses only one well per structure. But in both cases, the geothermal production well and distribution piping, rather, replace the fossil fuel burning heat source of a traditional heating system. Direct use geothermal energy has also been well received within the agribusiness industry, with the two primary uses being greenhouses and aquaculture, obviously also known as fish farming. Geothermal water with temperatures as low as 100 degrees Fahrenheit has been used within greenhouses since the late 1970s, with at least 40 greenhouses in 10 western states. That information is from the GeoHeat Center. Many of these facilities cover several acres. They raise vegetables, flowers, houseplants, etc. Most greenhouse operators estimate that using geothermal resources instead of traditional energy saves around 80% on fuel costs. Slide 11. For electricity production, most geothermal areas contain low to moderate temperature water, that below 300 degrees Fahrenheit. For electricity generation, energy is extracted from these fluids in binary cycle power plants. Hot geothermal fluid and a secondary, hence binary fluid, with a much lower boiling point than water, pass through a heat exchanger. Heat from the geothermal fluid causes the secondary fluid to flash to vapor, which then drives a turbine. Because this is a closed-loop system, virtually nothing is emitted to the atmosphere. And just of note, the U.S. GS is currently conducting a resource assessment for the entire United States to include low-temperature geothermal resources, those down to about 90 degrees Celsius, which should help to give us a much more accurate and up-to-date look at much of the low-temperature resource potential, especially in the area of electricity production. Slide 12. We'll now take a look at geopressure geothermal resources. That is the next subcategory on the list. So, slide 13. Geopressured resources, are simply subsurface reservoirs containing hot pressurized brine saturated with dissolved gas, usually and largely methane. Water temperatures can range from 90 degrees Celsius to about 200 degrees Celsius in these systems. Three forms of energy: thermal, from the heat, hydraulic, from the high pressure of the system, which can then be used to drive turbines, and chemical, from the burning of the dissolved methane, as in a natural gas plant, are potentially obtainable from this resource. The northern Gulf of Mexico is the largest region discovered in the U.S. that contains vast quantities of this type of resource. Slide 14. As stated, a geopressured resource consists of hot brine saturated with methane and found in large, deep aquifers that are under high pressure due to water trapped in the burial process because of rapid sedimentation and growth faulting. These resources are found in sedimentary strata at depths of 3 to 6 kilometers. The U.S. Department of Energy conducted a geopressure geothermal research program in the northern Gulf Coast to gather reliable geological, engineering, environmental, and economic information about this resource to determine its viability for development from 1975 to 1992. Four wells were drilled and tested during this program, and another 12 wells donated by the oil and gas industry were also tested. The program involved industry, universities, and national laboratories. The research identified geopressured and geothermal fairways in Louisiana and Texas and determined that high brine flow rates, 20,000 to 40,000 barrels per day, are possible for long periods of time. It also showed that the gas brine ratio averaged about 34 standard cubic feet per barrel of methane, and that used brine could be reinjected into sands below freshwater aquifers without contamination. Some other findings were that inhibitors controlled corrosion and scaling, and that a hybrid power system did generate electricity for a short time using both the separated methane and geothermal heat from those systems. Slide 15. As mentioned, the northern Gulf of Mexico geopressure geothermal resource has been estimated by various researchers to be the largest in the U.S., and that it can contain anywhere from 150 to 5,000 trillion cubic feet of recoverable methane and up to 11,000 quads of thermal energy in the sandstone pore fluids to a depth of about 22,000 feet. This is equivalent to many times more than the presently known conventional methane resource in the U.S. This resource contains chemical energy in the form of methane dissolved in the pressurized brine, and as stated, thermal energy consisting of the hot brines at high temperature, which could be used for secondary hydrocarbon recovery as well as electricity generation. And lastly, the mechanical energy generated through the high brine flow rates could also be used to drive specialized turbines to generate electricity. As can be seen from the map, there are also smaller regions of geopressured areas in the U.S. besides the northern Gulf of Mexico basin, to include areas in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Utah, Wyoming, and California. But to the best of my knowledge, rather, none of these other areas have received comparable amounts of research to that of the Gulf Coast zone, and therefore the resource potential in these areas is less well quantified. Slide 16. While profitable commercial development of the geopressured project that was sponsored by DOE was at the time somewhat unfavorable, the energy picture today has changed to an extent, and gas and oil prices are somewhat higher, with predicted major worldwide shortages in fossil fuels in the coming years. With improved technology, the development of the geopressured geothermal energy resource with its numerous direct and relatively environmentally safe uses could potentially be part of the answer to this country's energy issues. It may be time to start reconsidering geopressured geothermal as an alternative energy resource. And this slide just shows a conceptual rendering of what a geopressured system might look like. Extracting as much thermal energy from the brine as possible through what is known as cascading activities can help to improve the economics of the project. And it should be said that cascading would benefit not just geopressured, but low temperature and co-produced applications as well. And although with lower brine temperatures, precipitation and scaling from the geofluid may need to be inhibited depending on fluid chemistry as you lower the brine temperature. More dissolved solids precipitate out, causing scaling and other issues that would have to be dealt with. Slide 17. The last of the low temperature and co-produced subprogram resources that we'll look at is co-produced fluids. Slide 18. Under its current definition, co-produced fluids are those that are brought to the surface as a byproduct of harvesting hydrocarbons. While largely limited to oil and gas wells currently, there is no reason that co-produced fluids can't be utilized in mining and coal bed methane operations as well, or any hydrocarbon extraction site where large quantities of hot water are being produced. Slide 19. Barriers and benefits. At the present time, the objective in most hydrocarbon fields is to limit water production as much as possible because it is a major expense and an inconvenience. Fracturing and completion strategies are designed to accomplish this goal. Yet even so, there is an estimated 25 billion barrels of hot fluid produced annually from oil and gas wells. So if we can demonstrate an incentive to produce even more water than is currently being produced, and if we can do this through the showing the economic benefits of energy savings and through prolonging the life of the field, then there is potential for power production from what is currently a waste stream in the thousands of megawatts. Slide 20. By installing off-the-shelf technology, geothermal power can conceivably and quickly and cost-effectively be brought online in existing oil and gas fields. Beyond that, producing electricity from co-produced oil / gas fluids has the, again, potential to turn what was a nuisance waste stream into a source of additional revenue, helping to improve the overall economics of the field, and again, extend the life of the field. Piggybacking on the existing infrastructure really does eliminate the needs for expensive drilling and other operations that are oftentimes required in other geothermal systems, but should not be in oil and gas production through co-produced fluids. Slide 21. And this map just provides some sense of the quantity of heated water, or rather hot geofluid, created in oil and gas production. If at an average temperature of 140 degrees Celsius, NRL estimates that co-produced fluids could generate close to 12 gigawatts of potential power. However, NRL is currently reanalyzing their data, and we should have an update or an updated reserve estimate in the coming months. But again, I would like to point out this is only for the fluid that is currently being produced in oil and gas wells and is not inclusive of all the hot geofluid that is intentionally left down in the reservoir when producing all this oil and gas. So the overall potential is much larger if we can encourage people to produce this co-produced hot water with their oil and gas, if we can make it economically advantageous for them to do so. Slide 22. But what we do know for certain right now, and as can be seen from this map, is that there is an extensive resource base, as I mentioned, of hot co-produced water that already exists in the United States. And again, while not all of it is being currently being produced, and some of it isn't produced because the well is shut in, plugged, or orphaned, the resource is there, waiting to be exploited. So, to wrap things up a little bit for the three resource that are found within the low temperature and co-produced subprogram, the geothermal technologies portfolio has dedicated itself to a much broader portfolio with these low temperature resources and technologies among these new areas of focus. While it's still relatively young or reborn, the low-temp program, we believe, is rapidly developing robust technical demonstration and R&D sections to help capture some of this vast potential energy source. Slide 23. I was asked to present some of the economics involved with low-temperature resources and have been doing so sporadically, shall we say, throughout this presentation, but we'll do so a little bit in a little bit more focused manner here. However, what I will be speaking to is largely a summation of different works by, again, Suber Sanyal at Geothermax, as well as some others. And I would encourage those of you interested in further information on the topic to read his and others' papers on the subject. And on the website, there should be a list of references that you can avail yourself of. Slide 24. As can be seen from this graph, the levelized cost of power, LCOE, for electricity in sedimentary systems is sensitive to reservoir flow capacity, designated KH, and temperature. An obvious takeaway is that the higher the temperature and KH of the reservoir, the lower the levelized cost of producing energy. And levelized cost of energy is a DOE metric that is used quite widely to average the cost of electricity over the lifetime of the plant. So you can do an apples to apples comparison and say, hey, you know, this is going to cost 6 kilowatts or 6 cents per kilowatt hour over the lifetime of a plant. That's LCOE for those of you who are not familiar. Not charted here, but also economically sensitive in this scenario is drilling depth. However, with drilling depth, there are competing sensitivities in that while temperature does increase with depth, so does drilling cost. Conversely, porosity and permeability tend to decrease with depth. In general, and this is, again, far from a groundbreaking observation, shallower, hotter wells with high flow rates are going to be more economically viable than deep, cooler wells with lower flow rates, obviously. We can also make a few more general conclusions, not all of them based on this graph, but these can be reached on low temperature, geopressured, and co-produced resources. One is that whether an existing normal pressured, meaning not geopressured gas well, if reworked, can be an economic source of geothermal power and gas is a highly site-specific issue. And again, that's going to depend on the flow capacity, the reservoir flow capacity, the dissolved methane content, the brine temperature, as well as other factors, including the well depth, how much it's going to cost to rework, et cetera. Another is that drilling new wells to produce geothermal power from, again, a normal pressured aquifer without any gas saturation is unlikely to be economic for self-flowing wells, but may be economic if you're going to pump the wells. Gas drive component of total power from a geopressured well is larger than the geothermal component, and then the kinetic energy component is relatively minor. So of the three different energy sources in geopressured, the actual methane, burning the methane, would be the largest component of total power produced, followed by the thermal energy from the geothermal, and lastly the kinetic energy of turning a turbine with the high pressured flow rate. So economic value of a geopressured well is sensitive to temperature and overpressure again, and again it's highly sensitive to the gas content. Geopressured systems are economic sources of geothermal power plus gas if reworked existing wells are used. Geopressured systems can be economic sources of geothermal power and gas, sometimes even if new wells are drilled. But again, these are all site-specific and would need to be determined on an individual basis. Selling produced gas from a geopressured system, geopressured well rather, becomes more attractive than making gas-derived power as gas prices increase. That's not terribly surprising. As the price of natural gas goes up, if electricity prices remain stable, it becomes more advantageous to sell the gas to the pipeline than to burn it for electricity production, of course assuming that the infrastructure is there for that option to be viable. Lastly, economics of geothermal and gas-derived power from abandoned or new wells is sensitive to resource degradation rate, which cannot be generalized and really needs to be determined for each individual reservoir. So, slide 25. We'll now take a brief look at some of the projects that we have partnered with and funded in recent years. Slide 26. Recent improvements made in binary cycle technology will allow for, we believe, economic production of electricity from co-produced fluids. One notable case in point is the successful commercial Ormat power production unit at Ramatse, which, as you should be able to see from the slide, is the Rocky Mountain Oil Field Testing Center. Ramatse is located within the Teapot Dome oil field, also known as the Naval Petroleum Reserve No. 3, or NPR-3. The field is about 35 miles north of Casper, Wyoming. NPR-3 is operated by the Department of Energy, both as a producing oil field and a test site for new and developing oil and gas and renewable energy-related technologies. To verify the concept of electrical power from oil field-produced water, co-produced water, Ramatse developed a program in conjunction with Ormat Nevada to test an air-cooled binary cycle unit. The project operated for over a year and then became part of the present collaborative project with us at the Geothermal Technologies Program, and has been there part of a collaborative effort for well over a year at this point. In September of 2008, at NPR3, Ormat and Ramazzi did achieve the first successful generation of electricity from geothermal technologies integrated with existing oil and gas infrastructure. Next slide, please. Slide 27. The Ormat power generating unit, known as the Ormat Energy Converter, OEC, has been producing 150 to 250 gross kilowatts of power since its inception. In February of 2009, the unit was shut down because of equipment problems caused by operating the unit in excess of the rated capacity of about 225 net kilowatts. Changes in the control system and repairs to the generator turbine system were then made. The new control system included the installation of a second hot water flow control valve, a turbine vibration sensor, and temperature probes on both generator bearings. The startup control for the unit was also changed, providing for a smoother startup. The unit was restarted in May 2009, but it was again shut down to address related field issues with the production wells and field electrical system. Again, the system was restarted in September 2009, which is phase two on the graph versus phase one, which is also on the graph. But since the restart, the unit has averaged 198 kilowatts net power output. The output power fluctuations noted in phase one have decreased markedly with the new control system. Just compare the green line for phase two with the red line for phase one in the figure. During phase two, the unit has produced over 896 megawatt hours of power from about 4.4 million barrels of hot water total. The online percentage for the unit, eliminating downtime caused by field activities, has been around 97%, so a very high online percentage. The power output of the unit over the last 60 days for which operational data is available averaged 212 kilowatts with a control set point of 220 kilowatts. So overall, the results from Ramazzi look very promising. We think that with some additional engineering and field maintenance activities, these systems can be modified to maximize the resource potential for any given site. The initial economic results are also promising with our NREL analyst, and if I haven't mentioned it before, NREL is the National Renewable Energy Laboratory analyst, coming up with an LCOE, which again is the levelized cost of electricity, of about 11 cents per kilowatt hour for the Ramazzi specific data, which they analyzed. Slide 28. We'll now briefly summarize the 10 American Reinvestment and Recovery Act projects, also known as ARA projects, that were mentioned earlier. This slide shows the first five of seven low-temperature projects that were selected and eventually awarded. The first project, Biwawe, will be utilizing a binary cycle power unit to provide additional power to an already existing geothermal plant, utilizing the wastewater that is at too low a temperature for a flash plant. And this is referred to as a bottoming cycle binary power plant. But in fact, all of these projects will be coupled with direct use applications known as cascading, or will be utilizing waste heat from already existing power plants, or will be developing innovative energy conversion technologies, such as the case with the Oasis Water Osmotic Heat Engine, the last project or the bottom project shown on this slide. Slide 29. These are the remainder of the Recovery Act projects. The last of the low-temperature projects are the two listed on the top of the slide. The two co-produced projects are next, Universal GeoPower for a demo project in Texas, and the other being a project for the University of North Dakota for a project in the western portion of that state. The bottom project on the slide was the sole selectee for a geopressured project, Louisiana Tank, which will be building a plant in Cameron Parish, Louisiana, that will attempt to utilize the kinetic, thermal, and chemical energy of these geopressured systems to produce electricity, as we talked about quite a bit earlier. All 10 selections bring the total award amount up to a little under $19 million for the low-temperature and co-produced sub-program in Recovery Act funds. Slide 30. Here, just real briefly, is a graphic display of the geographic diversity of the selected projects. While the West obviously enjoyed continued success with geothermal activities, Texas and Louisiana along the Gulf Coast and North Dakota in the upper Midwest will be the newest states to deploy geothermal power generation. And if it hasn't been mentioned previously, it really is one of our goals through the low-temperature and co-produced sub-program to continue eastward expansion, migration of geothermal power production, and to expand it into different geological and geographic settings. Slide 31. Finally, and again very briefly, we will take a look at some recent and ongoing sub-program activities. This is a Ramatsi Geothermal Technologies Program agreement, and while this slide covers an internal activity for DOE, I think it bears mentioning for its possible impact on the industry and the level of commitment it demonstrates in DOE's real commitment to pursuing geothermal applications in oil and gas fields, co-produced resources. So the Department of Energy's GTP and Ramatsi, who is in the Office of Fossil Energy, have committed to a formalized working agreement that will facilitate responsible development of geothermal power projects at the Ramatsi test site. With this MOU, these two programs hope to ensure the continuation of current and future testing and validation of promising innovative geothermal technologies, specifically those that are applicable to oil and gas applications with geothermal electrical power generation. Slide 33. Another activity is a low-temperature roadmap, which is currently posted on our website for review and comment. It will be open for review until early December, and I would encourage those of you who are listening to this soon after it being posted to take advantage of the opportunity to look through that and provide comments. The low-temperature co-produced geopressure geothermal technology strategic action plan, also known as the roadmap, which is easier to say, presents an action agenda for the sub-program to efficiently and effectively leverage its resources in support of the goals and priorities of the geothermal community. Specifically, the agenda, when implemented, will help provide the community with the means to achieve the development and widespread deployment of economically viable, innovative, and scalable technologies, and ultimately achieve the vision, help to achieve the vision of 3 gigawatts of installed low-temperature, co-produced, and geopressure geothermal capacity in the United States by 2020. Finally, for sub-program activities, earlier this year, a funding opportunity announcement, also known as a FOA, was made available to the public. Funding was available in three topic areas: low temperature, again, those resources below 150, co-produced fluids, but it should be noted that we did include both productive, unproductive, or marginal oil and gas wells, as well as mining operations or other hydrocarbon or mineral extraction processes. So trying to expand the definition of co-produced into a wider swath of activities. And then lastly, again, highly pressurized, geopressured resources. Out of this funding opportunity announcement, 7 awardees were selected, and those are still finalizing negotiations and should to begin to come online next year. So between the Recovery Act and this year's funding opportunity, 17 low-temperature co-produced and geopressured projects excluding our test facility at Ramazzi, which sort of falls outside of the purview of these other projects. Okay, thank you very much for listening. I hope you found this useful. I would like to thank those on our staff here at DOE, specifically Elizabeth Metcalf and Rachel Bilk, for their assistance. Anything done correctly, any credit should rightly be shared with them. Any fault, whether through error or omission, is mine. If you have any questions, comments, please feel free to contact us. And thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.